116 and 117. And the subject really, although it is called the providence, Hashem's providence, both with regard to the individual and to the klal, that is, to the nation as a whole, what the Yerach Hashem is really dealing with is how Hashem makes every possibility for each one of us to qualify for the Olam Haba. One cannot come to the Olam Haba with a soul that is besmirched. So it's got to be, there's got to be the purity, and only then can one be part of the Olam Haba. But everything is done in order to achieve that. Now, tonight, we are going further on that subject. And in paragraph 7, verse 7, paragraphs, Zion and 7, I am going to introduce you tonight after I've given you a little of an idea of what he says in the opening verses. So if you will bear with me, I'll read to you the English translation as I go along. He says, O Tzorich Lodas, furthermore it is necessary to know, שהנה ההשגוח הוא היגיון ובכל פרוט מהפרוטים משגחת על כל הניץ שרבל מן הקדמוני ומן המאור חורי. Now it says that when God exercises his ההשגוח, when Hashem exercises his providence, he takes into consideration that which preceded and that which is going to succeed. And I'm just using words, the meaning of it will become clearer a little bit later. The final matter is that Hashem cares and provides for every individual, also taking into consideration the whole. That means the whole of the people, the whole of the nation. So there are those two parts, that is the individual and the whole. Mitzad kol ma shemishgachos in kol atlokim in kol chelek levinyona shel atlok. That is, in that, each part is part of the whole. Each part relates to the whole. The part is not something that is divided from the whole, but each part relates to the whole. And I'll explain all that in greater detail in a few minutes' time. Umimashi Yushka Fedino Shel Ish Mayo Ishim, Umate Koso, Umatovo, Bahmashi Kodmulo, the Hainu Ovos, Ubamashi Yaharulo, the Hainu Habonim, Umashi Imo, the Hainu Venea Del, Ovenea Il, Ovenea Hebro, the Acha Kolha Hashkoponso, Ero Igozero Lovahelek, Babedo Vanipio. He says, now Hashem takes, when he's dealing with individuals, Hashem takes into consideration his past. By what he means by his past is his antecedents. He also takes into consideration his future. By his future he means those, his issues, those who will be born of him. And he also takes into consideration the present. The present is those who are connected with him, the people with whom he associates during his lifetime. All have an influence in him, on him, and Hashem takes that all into consideration. Now, let us just try and understand that. First of all, let us state that Hashem takes into consideration his future. Didn't I do this with you last week? I just started with last week. Now, we've got the classical example of Shimi ben Gero. Shimi ben Gero is the one who curses David HaMelech, who throws stones at him, and David HaMelech is a king, and he's a king of his divine appointment. The punishment for a person who does that is death, because David HaMelech has got that authority. Anyone who disturbs that authority, never mind undermines that authority, is guilty and his sentence is death. David HaMelech spares Shimi ben Gero. Shimi ben Gero asks David HaMelech, afterwards when David HaMelech comes back again after the revolution of Avshalom, and David HaMelech is now enthroned as king. Shimi ben Gera comes to apologize and to ask for forgiveness, but that is not enough. Shimi ben Gera, who afterwards becomes Shlomo HaMelech's teacher, Shimi ben Gera knows the dinim very, very well and very deeply. He's not satisfied that David HaMelech just says, yes, you're forgiven. Says, everything forgiven. David HaMelech says, everything forgiven. Shimi ben Gera knows everything is nothing. And Shimi ben Gera says, swear to me that you won't do anything to me for what I did to you, that I cursed you and I undermined your authority. Swear to me that you won't kill me for it. David HaMelech takes it and swears to me. So he's spared. From Shimi ben Gera is eventually born Mordechai. So what the Derech Hashem says is that Hashem spared Shimi ben Gera. David HaMelech was the instrument, only so that Mordechai should be born. When Shimi ben Gera has born that child, from which the issue will come eventually, and there will be a Mordechai, then Shimi ben Gera is not meant. Then it's carried out, his punishment is carried out. And so it happened that Shlomo HaMelech carried out the punishment and passed the sentence of death on Shimi ben Gera. And David on his deathbed told him, Shimi ben Gera is deserving of death. I took an oath, but that oath doesn't apply to you. When he does something that is worthy of death, then you don't have to spare him anymore. So Hashem takes into consideration the subsequent issues. Who knows what a person can produce to? Hashem takes that into consideration. In addition to that, Hashem takes, is that clear? No difficulties with that. In addition, you don't know, doesn't know what kind of a child one will have, what kind of a grandchild one will have, what kind of a great-grandchild. One just doesn't know. But Hashem knows, and it can be necessary for one to be born, and there are those qualities in the family, and those qualities will be found, when the time comes, will be found in someone in a descendant. So a person is spared for that reason. Also, Hashem takes into consideration a man's antecedents. Now, what does it mean, antecedents? And the Mishnah deals with it. Now, you probably know that if a man wants to, or a woman wants to insure their life, then they start with it. Is your father still alive? No. How old was your father when he died? How old was your mother when he died? And it's already becoming quite sickening. But they start with your grandparents. How old were they? But then for the actuaries to be able to work it out, what the premium is going to be, they need all this information. So I asked them, why have you got to know such details? They say because longevity is something that is inherited. They are right. It is transmitted. The only thing is they understand it from a purely materialistic point of view. We understand it from another point of view. You will find that certain traits run in families. In England there were the Haldanes, scientists, all of them. Goes right back. And the children they are all scientists. It goes in the family. And there are those spiritual genes that give the family that particular quality. So you've got, everyone has got his place in the world, what he has got to do. Families have got their places in the world, what each family has got to do, the function of each family. You will find that some families have got to do work where longevity is a required ingredient. For example, if a person is going to be a teacher, he can't be a teacher if he's only going to live till 35. That you can't possibly do that. Not if he's an educator. It takes much longer. A certain rabbi, young rabbi, came and said to me, how long should a rabbi be in a place? I said, it depends what kind of rabbi you want to be, or you're going to be, or you are fitted to be. He told me his father-in-law was a rabbi. I said, you must never stay in a place longer than 5 years. I said, if you are going to be a functionary, your father-in-law made a mistake. 5 years is too long. Because the congregation is tired of its rabbi in 3 years' time. In California, in less than a year. And they fire him immediately. Why wait until they're fired? Stay for 6 months. You're only a functionary. They get tired of you. Get out before they are tired of you. If, however, you want to be a creator, you want to be an educator, and you've got the ability to be that, you are fitted for that. 5 years is much too short. You can't achieve in 5 years. It's going to take you very much longer. So it depends. You'll find that those families have got longevity. Live for a long time. They've got to be able to do it. Some people will achieve not by teaching in the way of educating, but by writing. Those people don't have to live so long. So everything is taken into consideration. So longevity is something that is inherited, but it is inherited for a special purpose. The physique of a person is inherited. Man has got healthy looking parents, he'll look healthy. He's got very good looking parents. It's handed down, but there is a reason why they are like that. So the physique of a person, longevity, the Mishnah says this is handed down. Then there is kochas. Now they translate kochas wrongly. They translate physical strength. That's not what it is. Physique, that belongs to longevity. Physical kochas are middos. You find that a man is born with a bad temper. Everything, he gets angry quickly, he gets annoyed quickly, he's resentful, he's born with that. So he's got to train himself and discipline himself until he brings that temper completely under control. But there are people that are born like that, there are people that are born placid. That is inherited. And you mustn't think that it's not fair. Because the person who's born placid has got a better chance than the person who's got a bad temper, because the person who conquers his temper, he's well away after that. He's probably far better off than the person who's born placid. So it's all there is a zelu umaze. There is an equity in all this. And then you've got the question of wealth. A father is wealthy, a mother is wealthy, and they give birth to children, and then they are no longer here, the children share their wealth, and they've got wealth, and then they get to increase the wealth, and they've got children again, and now these children get married, and they marry a rich girl, so they inherit from both parents. They can become fabulously wealthy. That is taking into consideration the past. The past is taken into consideration, the people have got that. Intelligence is something, believe it or not, that is inherited. If you've got intelligent parents, you've got intelligent children. If, heaven forbid, a man marries a foolish woman, you don't know what kind of children, he doesn't know what kind of children he's going to have. That's why men are careful and they want intelligent wives. It works vice versa also. To exactly the same extent. But intelligence is something that is transmitted. So we've got five factors, says the Mishnah, which are transmitted. The physical appearance, the physique of a person, longevity, wealth, intelligence, and midas. Person is born kind, another person is born cruel. These are midas. And they were inherited from our father. So Hashem takes all that into consideration. He takes into consideration the past also, and then he takes into consideration the people with whom he deals with. A person is born in California. Now, I didn't know that people were born in California only until a couple of years ago. I thought everybody here came from somewhere else. He's born in California. But what chance did he have? until 20 years ago. What chance did he have? So all that is taken into consideration. Oregon, just as bad. All that is taken into consideration. That is the man's prison, where he is. So when Hashem deals with a person in his lifetime, all these things are taken into consideration. From where you come, your background, what you're going to produce, and your presence with the people with whom you mix for the present moment. I'll come to greater detail on that a little bit later. Now, on the Olam Habo, of course, it's a little bit different. And on the Olam Habo, each man there is judged on his own. Bein lo yisor be'avon ho'od. A son there doesn't suffer for the sins of his father. Yet in this world he does. That's all transmitted. If the father goes to prison, then the son suffers. And he wants to marry a girl, and the girl's father says, no, I don't want you to marry that boy. And she says, but why not? His father, I know what you think, his father is in prison, but it isn't the boy's fault. He said, no, it's the father's fault. It's not the boy's fault, it's the father's fault, but there's a fault there. It means that on Friday night I've got to sit down in the table together with him. I don't want to. I've got nothing to discuss with him. He can only discuss baseball. I'm not interested in baseball. If there's a Dvar Torah, he looks at his watch. And if the Dvar Torah is more than 10 minutes, he takes off his watch and he puts it to his ear. He said, I can't have, you expect me to have anything to do with a person like that? Not the boy's fault, of course not. On the Olam, but on the Olam Habo, when the person comes on the Olam Habo, that is, then it's not taken. Then the person is judged only for what he is. And he says that is in how God works with that thing. He says, you see, if a man deserves, a man deserves to have wealth, or he needs wealth, he says, then his sons will have that wealth, although they may not deserve it, and they may not need it, but that is transmitted. Those are one of the things that is that are transmitted. And so you've got a character like Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. This was a man who, at the time of the Roman occupation of Palestine, what today is Israel, when he was, he represented the Jewish people. He was the head of the Jewish people, Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. To such an extent that the Antony, who was the Roman governor of Palestine, was a great friend with Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. It is said that Antony in secret became Jewish. And when he became emperor, he assumed another name. He assumed the name of Marcus Aurelius. And it is said that he converted to Judaism and practiced his Judaism secretly when he was emperor of Rome. What we have from him is a book called Meditations. And the book in Hebrew has been translated into Sefer Amidos. And my uncle used to quote from Marcus Aurelius' Sefer Amidos. Most wonderful thing is I've got a copy of it in English, the translation. He originally, although he was a Roman, he wrote it in Greek. Now, most of that is what he heard from Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. It's the most wonderful stuff. He heard it from Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, was his teacher. And when he was emperor, when he was governor, he used to go secretly to Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi was a very wealthy man, only because he needed that wealth for his position. His children had that wealth, not because they needed it, but this is something that is transmitted, that is proof of it. In other words, the parents can, may have achieved something, and their achievement goes over to the children. It becomes weaker and weaker as time goes on. But that is the way Hashem has created his relationship with these human beings. And I'm making myself clear. There was a very interesting, many interesting men in England, and one of them was a man called G.E. Moore, not to be confused with the G.F. Moore that was in Harvard, and was a very religious man, and he was a goy, he was an authority on Judaism. But this was a goy, G.E. Moore was a goy, he was a professor at Cambridge, and he was the man about whom Bertrand Russell said that he was the most upright man that he had ever met. And he said about G.E. Moore that he'd only told one lie in his life. And Russell believed that he was the cause of G.E. Moore having told that lie. And he said, what was the lie? He said he was once walking with Moore, they were both professors at Cambridge, they were once walking with Moore behind the university, behind the colleges, and he said, I suddenly turned on Moore, and I said to him, Moore, have you ever told a lie in your life? And quick as lightning, Moore said, yes. And he said, that is the only lie that Moore has ever told in his life. So you get, now Moore was the son of a clergyman. He wasn't religious at all. He was a liberal. He was anti-religious. But so upright. But that's where he started. With his grandchildren, it had all gone. Nothing there anymore. But he, that was transmitted to him. Stopped, didn't go beyond the grandchildren. So these are things that Hashem has, so to say, built into the universe. That is, in the same way, the father works hard and he earns a fortune, he hands over the fortune to his children. So also his middos, if he works hard, something goes over to the children. Character goes over to the children. It is, and it goes over to the children. So we've got the past, we've got the future, sense setting, and of course the present. But once a man is on the Olam HaBo, then he's judged. What he's achieved here, he's judged for that. I think that that takes us and maybe the Derech Hashem says, and of course in the same way as Hashem can make it cease, that it goes so far, and then that particular train, the character ceases to be in the children, can be, the money ceases to be in the children, Hashem takes everything into consideration. Now that gives you some idea of it. And now I want to go back with you and to discuss what he said at the beginning. Yes,
Siva?
The rest of the five things that are transmitted become weaker and weaker with each generation. Not necessarily so. But they can. No, not necessarily, but they can become stronger. Not necessarily weaker. I gave you an example of the Haldane. We've got it. You've got the view in the gourd, and it goes over to the Bihitzko Veloshna, the son of the Chaim Veloshna, married to the family, and then it goes over to it goes over to the Soloveitchiks. It goes right over to the present day. Then you have the first of Yosha Be'er, and then you have the Chaim Briska, and then you have the Briska Law of the Belville, and then you have the Briska Law of Son. Now that's already coming to my day. And then the Biskarov's son, now you've got the Biskarov's grandson. And you know how many generations it goes back, and we've got all this very clear. Never been a break there. And the learning has been there all the time, and that great depth in learning. But Reb Belville's learning was different from Reb Chaim Brisker's, not generally speaking. And Reb Chaim Brisker's was different from his father's, that is from Reb Yosha Be'er's. And Reb Yosha Be'er's was different from Reb Chaim Veloshner's, Reb Yitzchok Veloshner's, and they were a little bit different from the Vilna Gaon. They were differences, but it fitted into that framework. Oh, very much on the effort. If there's no effort on the vigil, then it goes. So sometimes something, a seed, a gene remains, a spiritual gene, and then it can reawaken later on, as we find. Now, that is more or less, I've given you the essence of what takes place in paragraph 7. And I want to go more into the details of that now. And I want to deal tonight with one particular detail, and that is in the beginning where he says, the self dover mashgatas bas gokas kol prot al kol ha krol kulo, that is Hashem, the providence is over every individual, but also over the nation, and also over the individual as part of the nation. And I just want to explain to you, Derech Hashem is very short, but in order to explain it to you properly, I've got to go more deeply into it. I told you about the woman that wanted to come to this shir, and she wanted to know what she was learning, and I said, we're learning Derech Hashem. She said, oh, I've gone right through, I've never heard of Derech Hashem. I said, well, there's no point of you coming to the shir. He said, no, I don't think so. Fine. But now, in the beginning of today, this week's paper, Hashem says, Dabeiru b'nei Yisrael v'omartu, sorry, I've got the wrong one. The Hashem says, Se'u et rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Hashem speaks to Moshe and he says, number kol adas b'nei Yisrael, the whole Eidor of the B'nai Yisrael, that is the congregation of Israel, of the B'nai Yisrael, the Mishpachosom, according to their families, what it means there, according to their tribes. So divide them into the descendants of Reuven, Levi, Shimon, Yehuda, right, all the 12, divide them into their tribes. So number them, first of all, by their tribe, the base of it from, and then by their family. That there is a family consisting of a father, children, grandchildren, then according to their family. The mispar shemos, by the number of their names, each individual has got a name. Kol zochor, every mayor, the gulgulosom, according, the gulgulosom means, according to the head, that means that each one makes a contribution of half a shekel, and then you count the half shekel. The idea is that you don't count a person by just as a number, but you count him by the contribution that he makes towards the service of Hashem. That half shekel goes for the upkeep of what was then the tabernacle, the Mishkan, and what was later the Beit HaMikdash. So this counting has got to go by, first of all, it is the individual, and then in the family, and then the tribe, and then after the tribe, the whole of Israel. And now we get some idea of how it is made up. So there is the Eidor, there is the congregation. He calls it the Eidor. Let us call it the community, because that is really what it is. It is the community made up of the tribe, which is made up of the families, which is made up of the individuals. So we've got the klal and the prat. We've got the community as a whole, and we've got the individual. Now this is something that is very important to us. And the principle is, and I shall explain this principle to you, the principle is that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. But those are only words. In what way is the whole greater than the sum of its parts? And that is what I want to explain to you. The principle is that the whole acquires a particularity and a singularity and a characteristic of its own. And then the whole imparts something of that particularity of that singularity of the character in his intermittent of it. That is the way it works. Now I'll try and explain it to you. Altogether in the Torah, we have got 613 mitzvahs. Now we know that the 613 mitzvahs are necessary to be a complete Jew. We've got some idea of how it all works, but not altogether. In the same way as in the physical world, certain foods that we eat, whether they be proteins, minerals, vitamins, all these things that we eat, they help to keep the body healthy. Now, if we don't get certain foods, it can affect our eyesight until we go blind, we won't be able to see. However, if we don't have certain foods, it will affect other functions of the body. But we must have certain foods, and altogether they affect all the functions of the body. And I told you before that we've got a relative in New York. She's an awfully fine person, and we've got stacks and stacks of bottles of medicine, natural medicines and things, which she makes us take with her and gives us the promise that we are going to take to her. I don't take them, I don't know if my wife does, I don't think she does, but she says the body needs this and the body needs that and the body needs that. I just know that my paternal grandfather lived to be almost 100, and my maternal great-grandfather lived to be almost 100. They were very strong and healthy right to the end of their days, but very strong and healthy. They knew nothing about vitamins. They knew nothing about all. We've got the intellect, and we put it on the hand over against the heart. The intellect has the emotions or the feelings, which is it? Be hard? Not at all. Only the feelings. Emotions and the feelings. That is what we want. I'm sorry. The intellect and the feelings. The emotions, any animal's got emotions. Now I'm using these two words because I haven't got a better word. So instead of saying A and B, I'm just calling it feelings and emotions, and I'm taking the feelings to be the higher one and the emotions to be the lower one. It's possible I should do it the other way around. But it doesn't matter as long as you and I know what it is we're speaking about. Elizabeth?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But when a man pretends to me, or when any of us pray,
yes.
And we have Kavanah, then Kavanah seems an only feeling?
No. Kavanah is intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Kavanah is intellect.
But it's not emotion at all.
No. Kavanah is, I'm doing it, this is the reason why I'm doing it. It can be feeling, I do it out of the love of God. Perhaps we've come to the subject, I don't think we'll reach anywhere near there tonight. But then we skip it. That is Kavanah. Mm-hmm. Kavanah is, I'm doing it for that reason. Now, whilst you're on the subject, and this is purely an aside, what happens if a person hasn't the Kavanah? Does he have the mitzvah or doesn't he have the mitzvah? He's got the mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the mitzvah, you see. What happens if I'm drinking a glass of water and there is a pot plant of tulips on the table, and I'm taking off the table, which I never do, and there's some water in the glass and I'm too lazy to go to the sink and throw it down, so I take the water and I put it onto the plant. Have I got carbona to water the plant? Does the plant have benefit from the water? So, even if a person hasn't got kavona for a mitzvah, of course it's desirable that he's got kavona. It's altogether a different thing if he's got kavona.
Mm-hmm.
But if he hasn't got kavona, it's the same thing. It's the effect that it has on the soul, he's there. Now, my grandfather on my father's side and my great-grandfather on my mother's side both lived to be nearly 100 years of age. But that wasn't the remarkable thing about them. The remarkable thing about them was the health they enjoyed and the mental alertness that they enjoyed until the very last day. And I told you the story about my great-grandfather, how he But he was 98, he cracked a nut and he broke a tooth. And the tooth fell out and another tooth grew, and I never believed it. And I told my dentist about it in Johannesburg. He was a very clever dentist, very good dentist. He was trained in Europe. And I told him, I said, you know, I think he was extracting a tooth. And I said, no, I don't like you losing a tooth. Another tooth is not going to grow. He said, no, he said, but we'll manage it. You don't have to be afraid of it. Today it doesn't matter. Anyway, he comforted me. And then after he had extracted the tooth, I told him the story about my grandfather. I said, you know, there is a mystery, a joke that goes about in our family. I heard it from my mother. She knew my great-grandfather. Her grandfather. So he looked at me and said, don't laugh. And he went to his bookshelf and he took out the book and he read to me that he knew exactly where it was. Literally a paragraph in German describing exactly that and explaining how it is. That it is possible. I'm just telling you this, how healthy they were. Now, I've looked amongst our papers. I've never found a diet chart from my great grandfather. How much vitamins he must have, how much broccoli he must eat, calcium there, and iron there, and he must eat that, and he mustn't eat too much of that, and he mustn't have any milk, and he mustn't have any cream, and he mustn't have any butter, and he mustn't have any eggs because of cholesterol, whatever I must have there. And I mustn't have any sugar, and I mustn't have any meat, and I mustn't have any stuff. I found nothing about that. He didn't have any of those things. So you need to say, when he ate broccoli, that he didn't get the calcium and the iron that he's in the broccoli. He got it without kavona. But without kavona. You see, that is the way that it's not the same thing, of course. But a person mustn't think that if he hasn't got any kavona, that he hasn't got the meat, but all his things. So, all right?
I asked you,
Lord,
because I think that I had the misconception about the meaning of
the kavona is this consciously. They say this intent. I don't think intent is a correct word. Do it consciously, I do. But please, that doesn't mean to say that you must do mitzvahs without kavona. Mm-hmm. See, you do mitzvahs with kavona. If you're going to do a mitzvah, you do it in the end. Think I'm doing this because it's a mitzvah to do it. You can do it. Oh, of course, that is very much better. Mm-hmm. Now, so, what we have done now is, we have taken emotion and we have delegated emotion to the area of the animal in the human being. We've taken the feelings and we don't yet know what the feelings are. We haven't discussed that yet, but we've discussed emotion. We take the feelings and the feelings are now in the area of the divine. But what we will have to discuss is what are those things. Now, I made a mistake in this thing. I should have given you another question. There's hardly any point in putting the question to you now because I've told you too much about it already. The other question would have been, which is the stronger? The emotions or the intellect? Which is stronger? There is, are the emotions stronger than the intellect? You think the intellect is stronger?
The emotions are subject to changing nature and connection. You can be, an animal can be happy, but if it was a human, it's suddenly upset.
Alright, so the
good,
the question then still has some validity. Which are stronger? The intellect or the emotions and the feelings?
Emotions are easier. Because they
can't be more easier. And they need more easier. Which is stronger? That's a difficult one. Which is stronger? Intellect is
the intellect can overcome the
emotions. We'll have to get a touch of that.
It depends on where you're taking focus, whether you're
sitting towards the intellect
or whether you're
sitting towards
the emotions.
Well, just let us if a person likes a particular type of food, and the doctor says, don't have it, does he listen to the doctor or doesn't he listen to the doctor? He's not
listening.
Of course he doesn't listen to the doctor, but the doctor says, I'm telling you, you are doing it. Yeah, I feel perfectly well, never felt as well as I did in my whole life. If you get blood pressure, that is blood pressure, high blood pressure, Morgan. I'm feeling well. I'm feeling well. Everybody, I'm feeling well. So, why should I? He doesn't do it. Does he understand that it's bad? Of course he understands it. The doctor shows him, takes out his books and shows him that. Once upon a time, doctors didn't do it, but today they tell you everything. Shows him everything. Yes, he listens to him. And what gets the better of him? His intellect, or his feelings, or his emotions?
Emotions.
Emotions get the better of him. So we see that the emotions are stronger than the intellect. Right? The emotions are stronger than the intellect.
Yes. Then there are some people who feel they want to go on a diet, and they're very strong intellectually, and they say, I know I must go on this diet. There's nothing the matter with me, but I decided I'm going to do it, and I will do it. And they somehow intellectualize, even though they're very hungry, and they want to eat, and they want to...
That the intellect gets the better of them.
The intellect is stronger,
yes,
if they can do it.
Then you say that the intellect is stronger. Now, I'm going to read to you a verse from the This is the verse. He who lays your seiro rimu dore ruach, umagidlo odom maasei chot. For lo, Hashem has formed the mountains and created the wind, and declares unto man what is and declares unto man what his conversation is. Now, if you will excuse me just for a few minutes, I would like you just to see what is wrong here. For Hashem formed the mountains and created the wind and told man what he spoke. I'll tell you the last part. He tells man what he spoke is that nothing that man says ever gets lost. Every word that we utter, and today again science has made it so easy for us to understand, every word that a person utters creates waves. And waves are something that you just can't destroy. So these waves we hear over the radio, we hear these waves over the television, and there's nothing to connect these waves. And in the same way, everything that a man says during his lifetime, Hashem is able to let him hear it at any time. That is, and declares to man, as really the Hebrew is, and he tells man, he relates to man, tells man, what must they say, what is his conversation? But the first one is, he has formed the mountains and created the wind. And if you'll just excuse me for a couple of minutes, you can think of that. Anything there that kind of strikes you as strange, please excuse me. He has formed the mountains and created the wind, and he tells man what he has spoken. Anything strange there? Yes?
I found it interesting. Yes? One is that form can be created. And also, in that I would assume that created with a compulsion. And just that there were two different goals. So the wind and the mountains must be combined with a very different thing.
Yes, that's not altogether right. You know the way we work. We first of all take it as literal as possible. And if we've got to afterwards interpret, then we do that after certain different possible. Yes, Jenna?
Well, I'm not sure when man was created, but he says that he's told man what he said. So obviously man was created already. No?
Well, I think these are three different aspects of manifestations of God. Rather manifestations.
Did he say man what God said or man?
What man has said. Actually, the Gemara goes further. The Gemara says, Masechel, Afiru Sicho Kalabay, according to this verse. Even that simple speech, simple talk, ordinary talk, light talk, that a man has with his wife, that also is recorded. Everything is recorded. That is what the Gemara says. That's how far it goes. All right. Now, my uncle asked a question, and he said, why does much better? Look at it. We form the mountain, and we create the world. Let us leave the verse for the time being. We form the mountains, and we create the world. Where do you think I get the idea of asking you these questions, which is stronger, this and this here? Which is stronger, the mountains or the wind? Which is stronger, the mountains or the wind? Can't hear people. Which is stronger?
The mountain.
No, the wind can break the mountain. It can break the mountain. So the wind is stronger than the mountain, and you can't see the wind. But it is stronger than the mountain. And there's what he teaches. Everything is fake. Jason says, I didn't do anything. I didn't kill him. I think he was a nice person. I think he does that and that, but it's true. Didn't kill him. He does have to kill him. Look at the wind can do to the mountains. Look at the strength of the wind over the mountains. That is the strength of speech. That is what speech can do. And astrology, that is what everybody wants to do. So then you see the mountains, and you've got ruach, you've got wind, and the wind is stronger than that. So you've got intellect, and you've got feeling. Which is stronger, the intellect or the speech? Well, and we can prove it. The proof of that. Now, just say this. You try and feel stronger. This is back to what I mentioned from Shabbos morning in this year. It says that you are made. Unless you have your faith, you have been singularly and significantly quiet over your faith. This is a participatory shiur. So please come into the flow. Now, the old question. Moshe comes to the people, and Aaron does the sign that Hashem gave to Moshe to do. And Moshe tells the people that Hashem has heard your cry, and he has remembered you. Mayamelo, all of the people believed by Hitzi, by Yishrachavu, and they bow down and they prostrate themselves. Why did they bow down and prostrate themselves? A demonstration of what is it? It's a demonstration of belief. Moshe tells them that Hashem has heard their cry and has remembered them. And they believe it. It's a great bow down that they say a demonstration of their belief. Then Moshe goes to Pharaoh, asks him to let the people go. Hashem said, I come with a message from Hashem, and I was Pharaoh lost to him. He says, I don't believe you know what you are saying, and I don't believe you know to whom you are saying it. Who's that your man heard ahead of him? And I must let the people go. You think I'm mad? I don't know what you're speaking about. He says, but I know something else. You've come to me because the people have complained to you. I can see that they don't complain. They complain to you because they've got too much time on their hands. I see that they have no time. Right, no more material is given to these people. They've got to produce so many bricks today, That continues, but now they've got to find out, find their own mystery. So it comes to Moshe. He goes into the people, tells them that I'm going to take them out from under their burdens, and I'm going to save them, and I'm going to deliver them, and I'm going to redeem them, and I'm going to take them unto me for a people. What more could you want from that? Moshe goes to the people, and they go. Where is all the arena? They understood it intellectually. There was no feeling. No feeling. Emotions you may have seen. May have been happy about it. Emotions here. But no feeling. What is this feeling? And he says in the Torah, Hashem says, he will die to a German who shall know it this day, that he will say it. Hashem enter all of the world. And lay it up into your heart. Because you are the believer, Eidu Hashem, and you see the Tavacha, you are the Bobecha. And these words which I command you this day shall be upon your heart. It doesn't say in your mind. It says on your heart. The heart is the seat of the emotion. Exactly what that means, I can't tell you. As far as I can see, it's going to be taken very quickly. But the heart is the seat of the emotion, of the feelings. These people without feelings, what is going to happen? It is possible to have the light that goes into the earth. It is possible that it stops there. You know, in English they say, it goes in one ear and out of the other. Otherwise, what would one have done? Would it were only that way? If it goes in this ear and out of that, then in the middle, there is a brain. So these comes through the brain, would be a wonderful thing. But in Hebrew, we've got another expression. And that is, of nine atumos. It goes just into the ear, and there it stops. It stops before it comes to the brain. And comes out the same ear, not the other ear. But it stops before it comes to the brain. What do you have? We want you to go into the brain, from the brain into the mind, from the mind into the whole intellectual system. And then only do you understand it intellectually. And from there, it can go into the field. And if it goes into the field, it's the area of the neshama, it's the area of the divine in there. And that we will discuss in greater detail next week. Thank you.
Are we
going to
stay
in that
without feeling
the meaning? No. It can't be intellectually meaning. Okay.
Okay,
you're still stronger. You know the famous story about his paper? You have a most wonderful idea. When you did your degree, didn't say you learned, but started your reading with these ethics, so that. Didn't get your nursing skills? Or didn't I demand that of nursing school, or didn't I read you the ethics of Aristotle?
Yeah,
well, I didn't. Yeah. Couldn't have been in California, because there they didn't sophisticate. Yeah. And one day, Jesus came, he called on him unexpectedly, and didn't tell me what they should have done. And they walked in on him, and there he was, for the hot day, and sitting in the door, and called to himself, and they closed in and they saw him, and then they backed out quickly. He said, no, no, come in. He said, I want to give you a lesson, very short lesson. I'll teach you. You do what I tell you to do. Don't you do what I do. Your duty is to do what I tell you. Who understood him better? Aristotle or his students? Good. The Lord can understand it much better than the disciple. It's his creation. He understood it. Why didn't he do it? Understanding is good. Do this. That is got to go into another area. Understood it first. Do this. You understand? So there can be a need. Now you've got the people of Israel, but I don't believe. Intellectually they understood. And it doesn't. When it comes to the feeling, there is nothing to accept. Just the person that comes to me and says, I don't know why this should have happened to me. I'm such a good person. Why should this have happened to me? I don't believe in God anymore. If God can do this to me, I don't believe in God anymore. If the other person is not attached to me, come. There must be a reason for this. There's something else that is not going to hurt me. And that's not due to what I think that is wrong. And it becomes much better for him. He gets even more belief in God. The first one is intellectually open. The second one is a really constant to the people. The first is a really
important.
All right.
If God was stronger, it
didn't
necessarily mean good.
Yeah, it means stronger.
So
it means stronger, you see. So that is God, that the feeling is stronger than the intellect. But not than the emotion. There's emotion. Emotion is also stronger than the emotions. You've got the emotion, and in the face of the emotion, they are stronger than the intellect. Emotions are stronger than the intellect. You see why. Why should the emotions be so strong? They're not actually stronger. The feelings are stronger than the intellect. But the emotions appear to be stronger. And that we've got to discuss next time. Just a moment to ask about that.
We are saying emotions belong to the animal in man.
The body is
something else. And that is a higher level than that.
So that is the condition.
Thank you. I don't think I was going to say that. Now,
But it was what you didn't speak that is what you came to suffer. And that is what he says to him. You know, that's the taste of the fruit. And we think that we eat the fruit because of the taste. It's not so. We eat the fruit because it's necessary for us to have that fruit. And in order for us to eat it, Hashem makes it so that it tastes nice. So we eat the fruit because of its taste. We eat the food because of its fragrance, of its color, of its appearance. Looks so beautiful. Makes us want to eat the food. And we eat the food and it provides us with all these things. So these people didn't need to be told about all these vitamins in there, what were called the carbohydrates, all this. Didn't they? The body's in zip, the body's in fat, the energy left. They had it all, they ate it all, because it had the taste of it was enough to make them want to eat it. Now, as far as our souls are concerned, the 12 mitzvahs, the 613 mitzvahs, supply all that need. There is only one great difficulty. There is no one person in the world to whom the 613 mitzvahs apply. What a single person. Some of those apply only to women. So even in California, a man can't eat with his family, he can't eat those mitzvahs at all. Then there are others that apply only to women. Even in California, however much the woman wants to be the man, that can't eat that. So there are mitzvahs persons from 6 to 7:30, where mitzvahs are only applicable to family. Mitzvahs only applicable to the bee. Mitzvahs only applicable to a king. So no one can think from the 6:30 mitzvahs. So how does it work? It works through the body spoke, through the oath. But the whole of the people keeps the 6:30 mitzvahs. And since the whole of the people keeps the 613 mitzvahs, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, so the whole is able to impart to each individual something of its particularity, of its singularity, of its characteristic, of its specificity, is able to impart to each individual, and that is the way each individual gets something of it. Now, once upon a time, when God created the tree, the taste of the fruit was even in the leaves and even in the bark of the tree. The whole tree had something of the taste of the tree. But that doesn't apply anymore. Only very rare instances. I believe in the extra that you believe to be, that believe to be something of the taste of the fruit. But it's in only very rare instances. And that is the way the whole imparts something of its specificity to each part. That's what it wants to say.
The Robert mentioned that there's some mitzvah that's applicable only to a king, and I think there might be some applicable only to the Beis HaMikdash.
That's right. And if the Beis HaMikdash is interacting, you can say, not some level of the Beis HaMikdash, but there'd be not the Beis HaMikdash, it would be there, that's right.
And also the same as when we have a king, because I don't believe we have a king, there's no, I mean, it doesn't count for the Prime Minister.
Well, Shamir, I didn't mention that to you, but he's there. Shamir would admit it. There is my husband, I think, but there she would admit it, but Shamir would admit it.
Or the God of Hazor.
Right. You know what it is. You must tell you about somebody you want. You have to tell you, you have to tell you, you have to tell remember that I
said.
Yes. The first time that he hasn't got to that thing.
Yes.
And I said, it's a big disappointment to you.
Yes.
You should really be wrong. But I have to tell you the truth. All right. Now, yes, anything else? Now, you see, that is the way it works. And on you know the old story from the Midrash that he takes the full parts of himself and the taste and it's got four fables, and that is the person who's got mitzvot and he's got Torah, and then he's got the palm, and the grape has got taste but it's got no fables, and that is the person that's got Torah and got mitzvot, and the other who's got fables but no taste, he's got mitzvot but no Torah, and then he's got the one that's got neither fables nor taste. And that means it's got no mitzvahs and no Torah. And you take them all together, and you keep them all together. Now, I put two notes of warning there. The first note of warning is that when he speaks about the person who's got neither mitzvahs nor Torah, that is very relative and subjective. When the Midrash speaks about a person who's got neither mitzvahs nor Torah, it's speaking about a person who is in Rashi who knows. Mishnah with the Rabbi knows. Doesn't know any Gemara. So he's got no mitzvah, and he doesn't understand what the mitzvah is. He's got neither mitzvah nor Torah. Now I still saw the water carrier that is the lowest woman. Next came the shoemaker, next came the tailor. But these were people in some towns they had what they called the Schneidership clothes. The Schneider, the tailor, was the head of these tradesmen. They didn't have electricians in those days, didn't have plumbers. So the Schneidership clothes They are the shoes with all the famous stains. That was Boy's shoe. The small shoe that would have the famous stain of the government altogether. But here they learned for Professor Blashie, and they learned for Mishnah and the Rav. They didn't learn the Rabban. They didn't learn the Mola. That is beyond it. They were called those that have neither stolen nor mitzvah. That's what it is. So that is what God is speaking about. That's one of the note of warning on this issue to you. Another note of warning on this issue, please understand that you take the Alba Moon and you put it together, but you still keep the Esrog in one hand and the others in the other hand. The Esrog at one and the same time must be part of the whole, but it must also be there, the part on its own. Now, that is the relationship of the individual to the class. And therefore the community in a world plays a very important part in Jewish life. The minyan plays a very important part in Jewish life. But the minyan is really only the basis of a community. And so, when the community keeps it, the husbands keep all the mitzvahs, put on their tefillin, the women get the benefit of it. The king keeps these mitzvahs, each individual in the community, in the nation, gets the benefit of the fulfilling keeps their mitzvahs, each individual also gets it. And that is the idea of the community. Now, in order to have a community, and there if I said we've got a community, but if you don't value that which you've got, what happens to it? You lose it. That is the story of David Miller, that his clothes, his garments, and the blankets didn't warm him in his own age, because he didn't value clothing. What you don't value, you lose. And we've got to be careful not to lose our community. So in order to not to lose the community, you know, so in order to keep the community, there are altogether three precepts one has to be careful of. Two negative and one positive concept. The negative one is, like, Kisna is a few hundred dollars. Mustn't be any hatred from one to another. That is something that's there. Another is, no sikkim and no sikkim. No revenge. Not even bearing a grudge. It's wrong to be bear a grudge. There is to be no anger from one to another. No resentment from one to another. Now I told you what the Maseilas Yesharim says about that, and I remember reading it to you from the Maseilas Yesharim. And the Maseilas Yesharim says, it doesn't take any revenge, doesn't even get a grudge. And if somebody has done me harm and I get the opportunity, but I know that he regrets that he's not going to do it again. I've just got the opportunity of paying him back in his own coin. I mustn't do it. So the Maseilas Yesharim, but this isn't human. After all, what is only human? This is superhuman. And I remember what the shock Edith had when I discussed this. You remember Edith? She asked me a question on it. And the Maseilas Yesharim answers, you are quite right. It's not human. It is superhuman. But that's what is expected of the Jews. The Goy is expected to be human. That the Torah demands of the Jew demands him to be superhuman. No super and no super, not even a grudge. No resentment. Once you've got resentment, it's bad. So that is what is necessary in a community. Another thing is, perhaps in a Leach of the Melchon. But you've got to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, of course, it's nonsense to love your mitzvah as yourself. So you've got to understand what it means, and the Rambam explains it. And the Rambam says it applies only to, I must do for another person, for my neighbor, that I would expect him to do for me, were I to be in the same circumstances as which he finds himself now. He desperately needs $5,000. If I was in his position, and I needed $5,000, and I would expect him to have given me that $5,000, lent it to me, then I must do the same for him. That if I take my life on holiday to Switzerland, I don't have to say every member in Africa, every member of my family also holiday to Switzerland, because I must love my neighbor as myself. Because when he goes on holiday, I don't expect him to thank my wife. I would resent it if he did. And that would be resentful. So, I mean, what? I'm not expected to do that. If I buy myself a new suit, I don't have to buy everybody in the congregation a new suit because I must love my neighbor as myself. Because if he buys a new suit, I don't expect him to buy a new suit for me. So the Rambam says that is the meaning of the Rahab and the Rayach of the Maker. But then we've got it, it's got to be an Arabic. And the question, of course, is, how is it, how does one achieve an Arabic? Now, this is something that I wrote out a long time ago, after I wrote it, to an Arabic. To take anything for granted is a very bad thing. To take a person for granted is a very bad thing. To take your husbands for granted, I'm sorry, to take your respective husbands for granted is a very bad thing. You know, I can't read your lips, but I can read your thoughts. And I know what you are thinking. I should be killing the husbands there, but they mustn't take their wives for granted. I do kill your husband like that. And that is why they are so nice to you. And when I find that they've not been so nice to you, then I speak to them again about it. Of course I tell them about it. No taking for granted. And the mother tells about the time he had an awful time with his wife, and yet he always gave her presents. And they asked him, well, your wife, she's so nice to you, why always give her presents? So then, I've got to appreciate her also. She gave me my children. She brought up my children. You know what that means? I can't forget that. Because I promise I told you. Now, I promise I told you is not only gratitude. I promise I told you literally, we always go to the literal meaning for the real understanding of it. It means to recognize the good. Some people just don't recognize the good. To recognize what it is you've got. And only then can you work. I told you about a certain gentleman who comes to my hearing in Los Angeles. He's a most remarkable young man. And he once wanted to tell me something about his past life. And my head stood on edge. And when we finished speaking, and I was so pleased to take to end, he told me, that is all that I'm telling you. There are some things that I can't even tell you about. I can't imagine that it can be anything less than what he told me. And he tells me, he says, you know, I was brought up in a place where there was a triangle, and at each corner there was a great man. I was brought up with them. One of them was a Boston River. The other was a yesterday celebration. What is the name of the child that I called this story? Who do you? Sorry. And the other was a rabbi, sorry, Clayton, that was born from. A great man. He said they were all living there. He said, I was in the middle. He said, you know, I didn't even know that. If only I had known, still didn't know. You had no hakoro. Didn't know anything about it. So, you've got to know what it is, you've got to have that meaning. But, to love one's next one, only one way in which one can do it. And that is, it's worth, anything is worth, to find in a person something that you admire. Something that you respect. But first of all, something that you respect, and then something that you admire. But you know there's a pitfall at every corner. What is the pitfall if he's got something that I admire, or he's got something that I admire? Jealousy, jealous. I begin to be jealous. And once I begin to be jealous, jealousy brings anger, and I find something wrong with him, and then it's rushing around, and I speak about him, and what is it, what does it come from? He's got something that I've got to admire. So one has to be careful of that. And when I admire it, the next step is I've got to respect it. I must learn how to respect it. Not only admire, but respect it. And when I respect it, I've got over the stage of feeling or that I've got over that. After I've respected, I've got to realize that I am benefiting somehow from it. In what way am I benefiting from it? And when I've got that, I admire it. I've found the quality. I admire the quality. I respect the quality. I realize that I am gaining from the quality. I'm benefiting in some way or other. And it is on that that I build my love for that person. So it's hard, hard work. But that is how the community is built up. By its individuals. That is how it's done. In the Torah, we read this word, the Mishpan Shemespan, by the number of the names, each person has got a name. Now there's a wonderful Yalkut Shemoni, a wonderful Midrash. And the Midrash says that, you remember, Adam and Chava, God gave them those names, the first people. Then Hashem called all the animals together, and he called Adam and he said, now give names to all these animals. And he gave names to the animals according to their characteristics. Those are the names he gave. Now the Midrash says, had everything gone according to the original plan in the creation, when man was, each child was born, God would give him the name. And the name would have the trail, the characteristic that is innate in that child. And the parents would know, the parents would know how to bring up and how to educate that child according to that trail that he's got. That is how it could have worked, and it would have worked, and we'd be where we are today. It just didn't work out. But that is what we have got to do in a community. And it is that that cements the community. And then, what the community has as a whole, it imparts to each member of the community, and each member of the community is something of it. Even if we are unconscious of it, it is still there. And in the Lithuania, there were towns. There were towns that were known for their scholarship. There were towns that were known for their refinement. There were towns that were known for their chesed. And you could trace it back that at some time that one leader, and this leader was able to instill this in the community, and it just rubbed off from one person to another in the community. And it was just too remarkable, the characteristics of the of what they had. Jagar was a town in Lithuania which was famous for its wise men, its scholarly men. It goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. And you find in the literature, Chachmei Jagar, the wise men of Jagar. You remember that the beloved king came from Jagar. Yes. The wise men of Jagar, each town, Kelim was something quite outstanding. Each town had something. Shavuot It's the liberation of culture we have in very fine religions. Each ground may be had its own characteristic. But that is something of the community as a whole is imparted to the individual. And that is why the community is so important, the individual is so important. Now in this particular paragraph, that is what we look at. There Hashem brings hope to us. That Hashem takes all this into consideration when he looks after us and provides for us and judges us. All this is taken into consideration. Past, future, and the present. The individual and the body corporate. Yes, sir.
Sometimes there's a situation, for example, like in camps and bad cancer, where there's an individual in the community who takes away from the community, in fact, tries to destroy the community or doesn't contribute to the community. So then, I don't know how people in the community should react to that.
The person who acts to that person is held at arm's length. David Amores used the expression, the fighting low heat by clean. This is another word. So those who undermine low heat by clean, I keep them at arm's length. No rudeness. Rudeness does more damage to the person that is rude than it does damage to the person to whom one is rude. No rudeness. But you keep that person at arm's length. You don't invite him to your house, he doesn't go to your house. He comes up to say hello to you, you say hello to him, and he says, how are you? Right, how are you? But keep him at arm's length. That is the way to deal with it. Eventually he calls out. Any further questions? Yes,
When you speak of the corporate self, as a teacher, I think that depending upon the community in which one finds himself, his own results are either worth. Seems he was more or less like judging on the curve, as a teacher would might do. If the entire class is at a very low level, then someone who in one community would be quite ordinary, in that community would be extraordinary. And yet his result are exactly the same. And how does Hashem judge?
I'm not quite sure. I don't think I've got it, Elizabeth. So can I explain it to you again?
I understand judging the individual, and I truly understood what you spoke about the past and
yes.
The pre-seasons and the end of seasons and the present. But when you talk about the body corporate, in essence, he's also judged in terms of how the community itself, how he fits into the community itself.
Yes, because he's judged the standard of the body corporate. If it is a very low standard, and he might be worth a very much more, but he hasn't developed that, then he's not blamed for it, or not blamed to the same extent. As a person who's got all the opportunities through the body corpus and doesn't take it. You follow? Let us say, a Jewish child is born into a community where there is absolutely nothing in the Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Jews, they don't believe in anything Jewish. They don't believe in the eternity of the soul. They don't believe that a person's got a soul. They believe it's all chemistry. That's the way they've been taught. There's nothing about anything Jewish. And that is the Jews living here. That's where he finds himself. He doesn't get blamed for that.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't get blamed for it at all. Now take a child that is born into a community where everything is kept. It's a beautiful community. He grows up and he doesn't face from that community. Then he is judged. So he can work both ways. He can be judged very leniently because the community in which he finds himself is nothing worth. He can be judged harshly because the community is an ideal community and he doesn't take from it. So he's to blame, but he's to just be judged. That is what he's saying. Everything is taken into consideration. And as we go on further, it takes much more, very much more into consideration. Everything is taken into consideration. And now he's speaking about the Chokhmah Elyona, so the divine wisdom of God. That is, we, the human beings can't work that way. Right? God can work that. Got the idea?
I just don't care.